Put on this computer. All right. Good morning, everybody. It is February 15th, now 11:20 a.m. I burned 10 minutes. I apologize. I was just explaining to the class that I was on a very important call that I could not ditch. In any case, time for us to get started. We need to do some resonance work. I'd like to remind everybody that the lab yesterday, there are people who are in lecture who are not in lab. And the lab exercise that we did yesterday was to go through and to do some support for the resonance stuff. It was some problem solving session things. And so that may be very helpful for everyone to go and take a look at. I put that in the email, but I wanted to make sure that I said it out loud as well so that people understood that that is an important lecture that may be very helpful for people. Okay, that being said, what I want to do today is to jump into some more resonance work. And that means that I also need to do a screen share with you. So let me do that. And I need to grab my lecture notes, which are not in front of me just yet. It'll be momentarily. All right, that gets plugged into there. And then my lecture notes are here. Okay, so we've been doing resonance. We started resonance. We started just the very beginning of it. And what we need to pick up today is really some more mechanics, some more examples. And I'm trying to recall, I think I did the one example. I did a positive example for you guys last time. Let's check and see what I did last time. We ended, yes, on that positive example. Let me do a negative example and show how that's different. And then we have a few other things to do today. Okay, so screen share should be up. I have lost you guys. There we go, now you're back and I can see the chat. And I can see everything that we need to do. And I'm gonna switch this to a new file and we are good to go. All right, so the example that I wanna do today is a negative. Let's start it off. With this molecule. We'll put a hydrogen on the outside. All right, so one of the things that I was saying before is that we typically don't show all of the electrons that are on the oxygens and the nitrogens and the heteroatoms, that the oxygens and those electrons we need to be able to visualize, that we frequently write it exactly the way that I have right now. What is missing and what you can't see is that if I just move this charge over just a little bit, is that there are three lone pairs that are on that oxygen. And in order to do the resonance, what we're going to do is we're going to take one of those lone pairs and we're going to push them in to the bond, not to the carbon, but into the bond. And then what we're going to do is that is going to make five bonds to that carbon. The carbon that I'm speaking of is the carbon that sits at the junction right there where the red dot is now. I can't have five bonds to carbon. So that means that carbon needs to let go of something. So it is going to let go of this pi bond that is here. That pi bond is going to break and is going to go to the carbon. And that carbon is going to get a lone pair of electrons. So we redraw. This time, the oxygen with a double bond. The lone pair of electrons now resides there. Actually, I'm going to do those in red. But what we would typically do is we wouldn't even show the lone pair. we would typically just write in the negative charge. The negative charge implies and means that there is a lone pair of electrons there. These are still on the oxygen up there. But how do I say this? The lone pair does not need to be shown, but the negative does. The lone pair is not required. But the negative is. Okay, so now that we've drawn that part, now the question is, what other resonance is there? Where else can this negative charge go? And this negative charge can go this direction into that pond, or it can go into that bond. Now, why can I go to each of these bonds? I can go to each of these bonds because in each case, if I highlight and show sort of what's going on here, the pattern that I'm seeing, that I'm looking at, is this pattern that if I take it away from the rest of the molecule, that pattern looks like this. That is the lone pair residing there with the negative charge. And that would allow me to be able to push into that system and to push out. It is the fact that this is an sp2 hybridized carbon that allows me to be able to do that. So that's sort of what we'll call the blue system there. The other one, if I could give you the vision of what is here in the green system is exactly the same. The green system comes down and goes to a double bond with the lone pair and the negative charge. And that is exactly the same thing. That is being able to push out this way. And the fact that this carbon is sp2 as well. And that is the green system. And you can see that those are two equivalent systems. And so I need to pick one of those systems to follow. I can pick the blue or I can pick the green, but I need to follow one of those two directions. I cannot follow them both. And what we are trying to achieve is we are trying to achieve a system of resonance that is all linear, so that what we want is we want A, B, C, D. We do not want to have something going off over here to F, or I guess this should be A, B, C, D, E. This is what we don't want to have. We don't want to do branching. We want linear only. So when there is a branch point like this, what we do is we decide to follow one path to its completion. And then at the end of that, we work our way back to this, but we don't draw them in a branched sort of way. This would be incorrect. So if there's another that is F that is there, then F would come after E and be done in a linear sequence. And we will need the arrows to be able to produce F. I hope that's making sense. In terms of, now I draw it from the incorrect, but I'll draw it from the F, and we'll put F up there. Make it look like that. Okay, so we need to decide to follow one of these. I'm gonna suggest that we just follow the blue. And in following the blue, we're going to take and we're going to make this arrow the solid arrow, and we are going to include an arrow over here. So I'm going to take this dotted arrow that I've been making my decision on, that gets pushed into the bond, not to the carbon. And then from the middle of the bond, to the end of the carbon. That's where the two arrows go. And we draw that segment now. And here again, we need to put the negative charge, but we don't need to put the lone pair. The lone pair is extra and is helpful to understand that there's a lone pair that's on there, but the lone pair is not required. It's also good to understand that there are two additional hydrogens that are on that terminal carbon. And so there are two additional hydrogens that are on that carbon along with the lone pair, so that we understand where they are. And now we've reached the end of that point, and we would like to come back and we would like to capture this ring and pushing the electrons. We would like to capture this movement that is the green movement. So how do I do that? The way that I do that is I take from the negative charge, push into the bond. I take from this middle of that bond to the middle of that bond, saying that I'm going to move those electrons into that bond. And then this last bond needs to go from the middle of the bond to the terminal carbon, or to the carbon that that bond terminates on, because that's where the lone pair is going to go. The lone pair is going to go onto that carbon. So again, from the negative to the middle of the bond to middle of the bond, meaning that I'm moving the bond from one location to the next, and from the middle of the bond, meaning that I am breaking it and I am placing them onto the carbon. I don't want to keep moving it into the middle of the next bond, because I would skip over the contributor that I'm trying to draw right now. And I know that from here, some of these little things that I'm saying may be slightly challenging to understand in terms of where I'm drawing the bonds and what I'm trying to draw. The negative now resides on that carbon. I want to make sure that that hydrogen doesn't get lost. And I'll add in the lone pairs that I've been tracking. There's that lone pairs. And then there's the lone pairs that now reside on this carbon with the negative charge. And that's where the lone pair resides. Now, once I get here, this negative can go further on. There is again another segment here that gives me a single bond, double bond, and I can push that through to that double bond. So what I can do is I can keep on going with this. I can go from the negative, which is how we like to draw it, to the middle of the bond. And then from the middle of the bond, out and on to the carbon. So every time we're going to stop, we stop on an atom, an element, either an oxygen, a nitrogen, a carbon. And at that point, we draw it to that specific atom. The negative now resides on the bottom carbon of the ring system. And that is where the lone pair sits. One more resonance contributor yet. Now what I can do is you can see the same system here, single bond, double bond. That allows me to take and to push the from the negative into the bond, and from the middle of the bond onto the carbon. This is going to give me one more resonance contributor here. I'm going to lift these guys up. And I'm going to take this now to the left. Now I have a double bond here and here, and I have the negative charge residing in the upper left-hand carbon. There we go. Let's see. I'm going to switch this guy. That'll allow me to go back and forth a little bit faster. Okay, and now there is another one that I could consider to draw. You could say, well, now I could take this negative and I could push it right back in there. And by pushing it right back in there and pushing this one back out, that might be an additional contributor. And that's kind of true. We need to talk about how we deal with aromatic rings and what the right way to deal with aromatic rings is. Let me zoom out so that we can see all of this system. And I know I've got a bit that's in the way here. I think that what I want to do is I want to take these. So that's the entirety of the system that I want to draw. And then I want to finish this out and compare some of these other structures that I'm going to talk about with this ring system. And let me do it from this point. Aromatic rings. In an aromatic ring, what we can do is, because they are fully conjugated and alternating in double and single bonds, I can push the double bonds around the ring system and I can draw an alternative position of the double bonds. Now, if I consider a numbering system, let's say that the numbering system is that this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. This would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. This is resonance. So what we have drawn here is we have drawn the resonance associated with the ring. And in the same way, we could take the molecule that we've been working on and we can ask, how important is it to consider this as a different resonance structure? These are totally valid, and it constitutes an additional resonance structure. What we have done is we have moved all the bonds in the ring system, and these two structures have a different arrangement of their pi electrons, and they are resonance. And so this is a good system or a good movement. However, it doesn't tell me anything about the negative charge. So while this is a good movement and allowable and is resonance, shows the flow of electrons, it does not help to move the location of the negative charge. Part of what we're trying to do with resonance, the goal with resonance, is not just to look at the movement of the electrons and how they move, but the goal of resonance is to assess relative stability. We do that, that is accomplished by looking at how charge is delocalized. Delocalized is a word that I've used before that people have asked me to define before. What does it mean, delocalized? Delocalized means to spread out, to distribute. The more delocalized a charge is, both positive and negative, the more stable it is. And so if that's the goal of resonance, is to assess stability by looking at how charge is delocalized. When I look at a ring system that is like this and I move the electrons around the ring, the negative charge stayed where it was. Because the negative charge stayed where it was, this resonance does not help me to understand delocalization. This resonance is allowable, it's resonance, but it doesn't contribute to stability. And so when we were going around this ring system up here and we started and we moved the negative charge came back to this atom in the middle. And then we pushed the negative charge out to the terminal end. And then we pushed the charge into the ring and then to the bottom of the ring and then to the left of the ring. And if I push it back in again, it's going to end up back here in the middle and it'll be the same structure as this, but with the ring in a different orientation. My point that I'm trying to get across is that by moving these electrons around the ring and keeping the charge here, I get a different resonance contributor, but not one that helps me to understand the stability of the system, because it moves these electrons around in the ring without moving the electron from its position in the center of the molecule. And what we tend to do is that we count resonance contributors, the number of resonance contributors, as being a measure of delocalization. For instance, this has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 structures. 6 structures where the charge is delocalized over all 6 structures. Those 6 structures, if I were to push the electrons back into the ring system here, I could get this one could count for 2 by moving the electrons around here. This one could count for 2. This one could count for 2. And then I would have, so that would be 2, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9. I could go to 9 total contributors, but that number 9 would be sort of a false idea of delocalization. So what we want to do is we want to concentrate on the contributors that move the electrons around, that move the charge around, and ignore ones that don't move the charge around. So the way that I'm going to word that here is the number of structures is a measure of delocalization? We want to count only those structures that move the charge. And so because we want to count only the structures that move the charge, we want to draw only the structures that move the charge. So let me take this same example that I was just doing, and I'm going to redraw it a little bit faster as I go through and do it.
Jason, can you scroll up just a little bit?
Yep. Here, I'll do this.
Perfect. Thank you.
So what I'm going to try to do is not go through as carefully now. And show you what it is I'm looking for without all the text. So I'm just redrawing these structures in the way that I would if I were doing the resonance on my own, without trying to be instructive. This is the way that I would draw it out if it were an answer key. Or if I were trying to analyze that resonance for a problem. This is what the structures would look like. And the amount of detail that I would give in terms of drawing the structures. You can see that when I get going, I draw these pretty quickly. But that's because I can envision everything that's here and I know what it is that I'm trying to do. That one I missed in the arrow. I want to go to that carbon. I know what it is I'm trying to accomplish. And it takes time and practice to be able to draw them this quickly. It might even just be hard just to keep up, even in taking notes. And this is where I want to stop. But what I want to do is I'm going to change color into gray. And I'm going to continue this in gray because these are ones that I would not draw. And then I'll explain why and show what it is that I'm looking at and why I would ignore these. And there's no other way to do this to be instructive and to show you without actually showing you. And so that just means that I got to sit here and I got to draw them all out. And there's just one more. So that's my last one. Okay. So what I can do is with all of these structures here, and I'll bracket them in there, I'm going to give these names. This is A, B, C, D, E, and F. And I'm going to go back and say that this is B prime. This is C prime, and this is A prime. That those primes that I drew, B prime, C prime, and A prime, the only difference when I look at C prime is that the double bonds on the ring system have been changed in their orientation. The negative charge still resides on the same carbon. On B prime, the negative charge is in the center, and it's only the double bonds in the ring that have moved. And on A prime, same thing. The negative is on the oxygen, and it is only the double bonds that have been moved. My premise here in explaining this is to say that these guys here do not move the charge. And do not contribute to stability. And so we tend not to draw these. Okay, am I making that clear enough? And the reason why, making the reason why clear enough? That those three just don't move the charge around beyond what has already been done. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to assess what has been done. So this part, when we get into the acid-base chemistry, this is where we really start to use this and start to explain and start to compare. Right now, we're not really comparing. Right now, we're just trying to learn how to draw resonance structures. But I want to distinguish between drawing resonance structures and drawing important resonance structures. That if I wanted all the resonance, yes, this three would be included in all the resonance. However, they don't help to understand the stability of the molecule, and they are going to make your work more difficult later on by including them. And so when I ask for the resonance contributors for a molecule like this, I'm really looking for the first six, and I'm not so worried about ones that duplicate and just have different positions of the double bonds with the negative charge or the positive charge in the same place.
So just to clarify, the ones that we will not...
You dropped out on me.
Oh, sorry, I must have clicked my button. The ones that we're not including are moving the double bonds and the negative charge only on the top, not in the ring or anything, because the ring's staying the same.
What's happening is the ones that we're interested in are the ones that move the negative charge. So we can see that the negative charge is on oxygen, on the center carbon, on the terminal carbon, on the right hand of the ring, on the bottom of the ring, on the left of the ring, negative charge in a different location every time. That's what we're interested in. The ones where the negative charge comes back and is in the same location as something that we already drew, even if other bonds here are in new locations, that is not as interesting.
Oh, I see. So after we completed the ring in F and we just continued to move, it would be back in the same spot.
That's right.
Okay, I am understanding now.
That's what I'm trying to...
Okay, that helps. Okay.
So now the other thing that I would like to do while we're here is we've been interested in assessing the major resonance contributor. And I want to be able to assess the major resonance contributor. And so we should do that for these six that are in black. We should ask which one of these is the major resonance contributor, A, B, C, D, E, or F. Anybody want to take a stab at throwing it into the chat on which one is the major resonance contributor between the first six?
Part of me wants to say A because the negative charge is on the oxygen, but I'm not sure.
Okay, negative charge on oxygen is an important thing. What is the first thing that we want to look at when we're trying to assess which one is major?
Octet.
Octet is good. And how do we do the octet, Jonathan?
Count the number of bonds and lone pairs.
Yes, except the easier way to do it, the easiest way to do it is just to count how many double bonds I see. So if I go through, because we can't break sigma bonds, so we don't need to count the sigma bonds because they'll all be the same. So all we need to do is count double bonds. And the one that has the more double bonds is the one that is going to satisfy the octet rule to a greater degree. That was the argument that we made before. So what we do here is we go through and we say, all right, this one has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This has 5 double bonds. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5 double bonds. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5 double bonds on C. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5 on F, 5 on E, 5 on D. So the number of double bonds here did not help me. Then I count where is the negative charge, because now I want to figure out where the negative charge actually sits. Since all of these are equally satisfying of the octet rule, the next question is, if they're all equal in terms of the octet rule, then where is the negative charge sitting? And that's going to help me make my determination.
And the most stable one would be the one that has the negative charge on the most electronegative element, right?
That's correct, yes. So this is going to be on oxygen, on carbon. All the rest of them are on carbon. And so the one that is the best, the one that is major, is indeed A, because oxygen here is the most electronegative, and that's the one that is going to be the most stable, is the one where the negative charge is on the most electronegative element. So Sophia, that was good. You had picked that. You said that it was the oxygen, but I want to be clear that we always want to assess the number of covalent bonds first, and then look to where the negative charge is residing. Just so that there's a hierarchy there, that the more covalent bonds is always more important than the actual element that the negative charge is on, or positive charge.
Jason, so when you say number of covalent bonds, that just means counting the number of double bonds?
Well, what I'm saying is that if we count the number of covalent includes all of the single bonds too. But if we count them all, we're wasting our time, because the covalent bonds, the single bonds can't change. It's only the double bonds that can change. So therefore, it's easier to count just the double.
What do you mean the single bonds can't change? Like the double bonds can shift?
When we're doing resonance, if I have a resonance contributor and I want to look at resonance associated with a molecule like this, what I can't do is, I'm going to make this a positive charge. What I can't do is I can't break a bond and move the electrons this way to draw something like this.
Oh, that makes sense.
I can't break a sigma bond, that this is a sigma bond. All I can do, this would be an error, this would be wrong. All I can do is work with the double bonds. And so what would be allowed in a system like this is I would be able to take the double bond and move the double bond over. Mm-hmm. And the double bond would go there, the positive charge would go here, and then the lone pair of electrons can move in. And this would be the full complement of structures. And so I could count all of the bonds and I could say this was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, that this has 6 total, but it has 1 pi bond. And this would be just the pi bond. This would have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. This has 6 total. And it has 1 pi bond. This one has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. This has 7, but it has 2 pi bonds. Do you see that the pi bond is what changed and increased the number? And so by counting all of the single bonds and double bonds, I'm wasting my time because I could get the same information by counting just the pi bonds.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Okay. So also with this problem, this is a perfect problem. If we decided to look at where the positive charge is, which one of these structures would be most happy with the positive charge? We can call them again. We can say that this is A, B, C, and A, B, and C. Which one of these structures, A, B, and C, is most happy with the positive charge?
Carbon.
If we were just doing the same thing that we did over here, except we didn't count the double bonds first, we just looked at where the charge was. So if we're just looking at where the charge is, which atom is most happy with a positive charge? Based on electronegativity. Jonathan, help me out here, buddy. Come on.
The oxygen?
Okay, Sophia, why are you saying the oxygen?
Because it's the most electronegative.
Ah, but most electronegative doesn't generally want to have a positive charge. Usually,
it wants a negative or neutral.
It wants a negative charge. It wants electrons. That's what electronegativity means. Electronegativity means that it wants electrons. And so a positive charge is absence of electrons.
Okay, so it wants the carbon would be the happiest.
So carbon would be the happiest with a positive charge. Except for something else that we're missing. So normally, if we were trying to, this is a challenging thing to explain because there's so many different little contrary pieces of information. Normally, if we were just deciding on electronegativity, we would say that by electronegativity, carbon would be the happiest with a positive charge. So electronegativity is carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, they increase in terms of electronegativity in this direction. And so being the least electronegative, carbon would be happiest with a positive charge. Oxygen is so electronegative, it's desperate for a negative charge. And so if we were to just go by that, we would say, well, one of these two would be major because the carbon has the positive charge, except for I've asked you to look at the total number of covalent bonds first. And we said that the more covalent bonds was more important. This had 1, this had 1, this had 2. Why is this one more important? The idea is that when I look at the octets on oxygen, the octet is satisfied. And when I look at these, the octet is broken. So carbon with a positive charge, when carbon has a positive charge, it looks like this. These carbons that I'm drawing have 2 bonds and the hydrogen and the positive charge. And that's only 6 electrons. That's a broken octet. Oxygen, when oxygen has a positive charge, oxygen has 3 bonds and a lone pair and the positive charge. This is now 2, 4, 6, 8. This is 8 electrons. And this is the octet satisfied. The octet being satisfied is more important than where the positive charge goes. The octet rule is a bigger rule, which is why we count the number of covalent bonds before we talk about where the positive charge is. And once we figure out which one has the most covalent bonds, we don't even worry about where the positive charge is, because that's the one that satisfies the octet rule the most. And so this one becomes major. Because it satisfied the octet rule the most. That's a hard lesson. That's an extremely important lesson. Let me try another one. You guys ready for another one? Okay. Let's do this. Actually, I'm going to drop this part off. Let's just do that guy. Okay, where do I want to start? Remember that what I'm looking for is one of two things with this type of system. I'm looking for either some element with lone pairs adjacent to the positive charge so that I can do this, or I'm looking for something that has a double bond next to the positive charge so that I could do this. These are the two things that I'm looking for. And so that pattern appears in two places. There. And there. And the other one that I've got here that I hesitate to show is the green. And so I've got to decide where it is I want to start. What I don't see is I don't see this pattern, lone pairs next to the double bond, or next to the positive charge. I don't see that pattern. I see this blue pattern, double bond, single bond, positive charge, double bond, single bond, positive charge. I see that. Again, a double bond, single bond, positive charge could be viewed as being the green up above as well. So where do we want to start?
Would you want to start with the positive charge and start moving that?
Yes, but let's say that there's two possibilities here. I could move these electrons out that way, or I can move those electrons out that way. And so by moving the positive charge, I don't really move the positive charge. What I do is I move the electrons, and the positive charge as a result changes its location. And so I need to decide which electrons I want to move in order to accomplish moving that positive charge.
Maybe move the electrons going to the oxygen.
Okay, so I haven't drawn any electrons going to the oxygen. What I have drawn is I have drawn electrons going away from the oxygen. So the arrow is taking electrons away from the oxygen.
Or the blue one instead of the green one.
Okay, so the blue one moves electrons towards the positive charge, not really towards the oxygen. So let's do that blue one. Let's take, and we'll start off there. So we'll take that double bond there. The positive charge resides. The bromide is there. Oh, I got one more double bond. Okay, so what I'm going to do in my first step is I'm going to go from the center of the bond to the center of the bond. Make a nice, long, looping, curved arrow. Draw what you have indicated. Now there is one hydrogen that is here. That one hydrogen is still over here, but now instead of four bonds to that carbon, there's only three, and that's why that carbon gets the positive charge, is because it only has one hydrogen on it. So that's what the positive charge indicates. Okay, now that I've done that, what is my next move? Now I need to find this pattern again. And that pattern resides here. So each time I'm trying to use that pattern recognition, I call it a hinge pin move. I think about this carbon as acting like a hinge pin. Or this one here acted like a hinge pin, and the door swung on the hinge and moved over to the other side, leaving the hole on this side. Now I'm going to do that again, and I'm going to use this as that hinge pin, and I'm going to swing it around. Let's go there. Center a bond to center a bond, and then I draw that. And then I put the positive charge where it belongs. All right, is there anything else I can do?
The green pole at the top in the looking for section, so is that meant to be just one structure, or is there meant to be a second resonance one that you just didn't draw?
Jonathan, I'm not sure I'm understanding. So you mentioned the green, and you mentioned this part up here.
To the right.
Oh, to the right.
No, I mean, yes, that.
Yeah, I didn't draw this yet, and we could consider that.
I just want to make sure I had the right other structure when I was taking notes.
Yeah, that's the other structure that's there. But I want to be careful about this one, because this one is intended to say that this is not good and that this is not something that we're looking for.
Okay.
That this is intended to be bad. And so go ahead.
Sorry, is that bad because the oxygen has a complete octet already, or it has a neutral formal charge already?
It's bad because the oxygen gets a positive charge in a way that violates the octet rule.
Okay.
It's bad because there's six electrons on oxygen, and oxygen bears a positive charge, oxygen can have positive charges. It just can't have positive charges by breaking the octet rule. It's very happy to satisfy the octet rule and to take on a positive charge. So that what we frequently see with oxygen is that an oxygen that does this, where there's a positive charge here and the oxygen moves in and takes on a positive charge by virtue of fulfilling the octet. This is good. This is octet satisfied. Something like this, where the positive charge resides here, and I have an oxygen, and I push the electrons down into that bond, taking the electrons away from the oxygen. The oxygen now gets a positive charge. This is bad. And this is oxygen octet broken. The idea here is that oxygen has an electronegativity that is 3.5. The highest electronegativity that we have is for fluorine, 4.0. Oxygen is an 800-pound gorilla in terms of electrons. It does not want to let go of its electrons. The fact that oxygen gave away an electron here and now only has 6 valence electrons, this is really bad for oxygen. It is too electronegative to be able to have those 6. It really wants the 8. And it's the 8 electrons that satisfy the octet rule that make this a good situation. And so I was setting you up to see this pattern, and I didn't want to draw this yet. What I wanted was I wanted somebody to say, hey, let's take these electrons and push these electrons down into that positive charge. And by pushing those electrons down into that positive charge, I get another resonance contributor. And because of that, and it puts the positive on the oxygen, everything looks okay, but it's not okay. It's a poor resonance contributor. And it is so because it violates the octet rule in a bad way. All right, so then are we done? Is this all the resonance contributors? Is this everything that we need to see? Is there anything else here that I can do resonance-wise? What about this pattern? Does anybody see that pattern anywhere in this set? Hold on.
That was my next question. I was going to ask if is it bromine?
It's bromine, yeah.
Okay, I was going to ask if it had lone pairs. I figured it did.
It does. And so that is that last pattern. And that last pattern takes and pushes the electrons in, do it in red, takes and pushes those electrons in red. And that last pattern gives me a structure now that has a double bond to the bromine. And the bromine takes on a positive charge. I can do a little better than that. That's a poor structure. Let's try that one more time. Part of the problem is I've got it zoomed in too close. Okay, there we go. That's the last structure. Now, out of those structures, let's give them names. And let's say that this is A, B, C, and D. Which one of these is the major resonance contributor? So we go number of pi bonds, 3, 3, 3, 4. This one is the major resonance contributor. Because of those four covalent bonds. Those four pi bonds. In each of the others, the octet rule is broken to some degree because of where the positive charge is on the carbons. So these are positive on carbon with broken octet. On this major one, all octets satisfied. And you guys almost missed that major one because you almost missed the lone pairs on the bromide. And normally we don't think of halogens as making double bonds, but they absolutely can. In a resonance sense, they absolutely can. And sometimes they can be the major resonance contributors. And so there's some things that we need to watch for. Okay. How about questions?
What does that say? It says plus on C. What is
it that? It says plus on C, positive on carbon.
Oh, okay.
Plus on C. Positive charge on carbon with broken octet.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so
quick question,
please.
Does a carb anion break octet?
Carb anion does not break an octet. That is a good question.
Okay.
When you're dealing with a carb anion, and we look at carbon, and it's got three bonds, and a lone pair, and a negative charge, this is an octet. And so it's fine. Whereas the carbocation, this has got six electrons and this is a broken octet. So this is eight electrons, six electrons.
What about a pentavalent carbocation?
Pentavalent? Dude, you're killing me. There is no pentavalent. When you say pentavalent, carbon can only be tetravalent. So what you're asking about is you're asking about something that has a structure that looks like this, that may have a positive charge. And this doesn't really exist because you're going into 10 electrons in order to get into that system. And it wouldn't be a positive charge. It would be a negative charge, in a pentavalent type of system like that, because you would count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5 electrons when it comes with 4. So that would be a formal negative charge as opposed to a formal positive charge. There isn't any way to get pentavalent with a formal positive charge.
I just Googled it to check, and apparently it's a carbonium ion. We will discuss this later when it's not distracting.
Let's you and I take that. Yeah, let's you and I take that on later. Those are very, very extreme situations, and that can only happen when they're not true sigma bonds. It's a different type of bonding scheme that's happening there, and it's more like a dative bond, where what you
All right, that makes sense.
And so then the dative bond is what you're thinking about, is where these bonds are not true bonds. It's really a carbocation, but it's got something over here with lone pairs which is donating, and something with lone pairs which is donating, and it's more of a dative bond. And so yes, that's possible, and we can see that type of thing, but that's not in the scheme of the realm of what we'll be dealing with. It fits more into the carbocation. It fits more into this guy over here, just picking up some extra electrons and not full covalent bonds, a little bit different. So, Jonathan, you and I can chat about that.
Yeah. Later. Yeah. Just to be clear for everyone, you don't need to know what a dative bond is.
That's true, too. We will later on. We'll talk about dative and coordinate bonds, and we'll talk about all of these other types of bonds later on. But that's not one that we need to get into. Okay, so that's really as much as I want to do with resonance and resonance examples. I've sort of hit the examples that I want, and it now comes down to resonance practice. What I would say here is that you need lots of resonance practice. The OChem as a Second Language book is perfect. I would say your textbook. I would say that I'm going to put out an exercise. And then I think I need to check real quick. Check one thing real quick so that I know where that first co-op is and what it starts on, and if it's resonance or if it's other structure. It's resonance and acid base. So it really doesn't start until after we get through acid base. So I need to get you through acid base. You could start the co-op, but you can't do it until we actually get into acid base first. I do have a review of general chemistry co-op, so I need to start that other co-op for you. But I'll get this other exercise. I'll put this up on Canvas and get that up there today. We'll give you some for SI as well. And I think that practice sheet will find its way into SI in where it's supposed to be. And you need to do as much practice with resonance as possible, because resonance is something that you only learn by doing. Resonance is just like playing a guitar. It's just like playing an instrument. You need to practice it in order to be able to do it. It doesn't matter how well you think you understand it by looking at it, it's pattern recognition, it's hand-eye coordination, and it's drawing and it's doing. And so I cannot emphasize enough how important this is for everything else that we're going to do throughout the organic chemistry class. If you don't get resonance, you are not getting through organic chemistry. That's how important this is. Okay. The next section that we go into is the acid-base section. And the acid-base section really starts to hit this home. We start to use resonance in a way to look at why things are more acidic or more basic in comparison. what we start to do is we start to look at relative acidity and basicity, not absolute. So next up is relative acidity and basicity. And acidity, am I spelling that? I don't even know if I'm spelling that right. I gotta, like, my brain is dying on base. Let's just call it relative acid and base. That'll make my life easier. The relative acid and base component, we start to ask questions as to which thing is more acidic or more basic. And we're going to be using resonance in order to do that. We're going to throw in some other ideas in there as well, besides resonance, but resonance is one of the main key ideas. And in terms of resonance, we're going to be using it to be able to decide whether or not one molecule is more acidic than another molecule, or one molecule is more basic than another molecule. And if you can't do the resonance, then you can't do that next skill set. And so this relative acidity is about comparison. It's not about absolutes. So the only thing that I'm going to ask you to understand from Chem 1B when you came in is what a pKa is, not how to calculate it. So we need Chem 1B skill, understanding pKa, not how to calculate. Just the meaning. So pKa is the acidity constant, right? And as an acidity constant, it's minus the Ka, it's minus the log of the Ka. That's what pKa is. And so when I'm looking at Ka as an equilibrium constant, and I take minus the log of it, the lower the number, the scale is such that the lower the number means the more acidic. And the higher the number, this is less acidic. We could go back into all of the component of looking at pKa, and that we can know that what the Ka is. We can take minus the log of the Ka in order to get pKa. We can write an expression for what the acidity constant is, and writing the conjugate base over the conjugate acid. And all of that usually just winds up causing people to, like, freak out and have flashbacks from Chem 1B. We don't need to go into that much detail. What we need to be able to do is we need to be able to just work from the pKa itself and understanding that lower numbers are more acidic and that higher numbers are less acidic. And if we get that far, that's all we really need to understand. And we'll be talking about pKas a lot. We'll be talking about, and I'll be giving you data of pKas, your ability to look at a pKa and assess how acidic something is what I need you to be able to do and need you to be able to understand. When we come into the next section, next lecture, we'll start off with a review of acid-base ideas. We'll talk about conjugate pairs. We'll talk about conjugate acid, conjugate base. We'll talk about Lewis acids, Lewis bases. And then we just start launching into some different factors that affect acidity. One of the main ones, and basicity, one of the main ones being resonance. And so your resonance skills need to be strong as we go into that, as we start looking at that, okay? So that's my pitch there for start with OChem as a second language or the textbook if you don't have it. And then I'll get that practice sheet up today. That practice sheet will start easy and we'll get to more complicated problems as we go forward. And I'll put up an answer key for that as well. Okay. You guys got it? Know what you need to do? You got marching orders. I'm going to go ahead and stop the screen share. I'll hang on the line if there's any questions. And other than that, we'll pick it up with acid and base when we come back on, what's today, Tuesday? When we come back on Thursday. Okay. Thanks, you guys.